Welcome back to Surviving Me. Today's guest is someone who embodies the strength, grace, and truth this platform was made for. Doctor, your name is pronounced Sonia, right?
Correct. That's
okay, perfect. And your last name is McKenzie?
Yes, it is.
Okay, perfect. Dr. Sonia McKenzie, Georgia's 2025 Mother of the Year, Hello Somebody, is a survivor of domestic violence, PTSD, and anxiety, and the author of the blueprint to Thrive Her, H-E-R, A Guide to Surviving and Thriving After Trauma, which I am here for. Y'all know that's what this podcast is all about, is just getting through it. So she's walked the long road of healing and come out the other side with a message of purpose, motherhood, and spiritual resilience. We're walking through her journey in five phases: the wound, the reckoning, the work, the now, and the message. So let's begin.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so you've been named Georgia's 2025 Mother of the Year, I think is a huge honor, and I'm so here for it. So can you take us back to what you had to overcome to become the woman you are today?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so it started, I won't take you all the way back, but I'll just kind of go over it a little. So when I was around the age of 7 or 8 years old, mm-hmm. I witnessed my mom being abused by my stepfather. And when I tell you that he abused her, her face was, it was disconfigured. There was, you know, a lot of bruising, a lot of yelling and threats to, just to be fully transparent and blunt, blow her brains out.
Oh, wow.
And this was something that I, you know, witnessed for quite some time until my mother had enough. And the sad thing in this is I witnessed it. And each time it happened, I would climb in the bed. Imagine me 7, 8 years old, climbing in the bed behind my mom and spooning her, you know, yeah. Because I didn't know what else I could do. I was afraid to call the police. I didn't know, you know, who to go to. I didn't know if I was supposed to tell. All I did was sit it out, wait till it was done. And I went and comforted my mom. Fast forward 10 years, I started dating someone, and unfortunately, that led to an abusive relationship. And at that time, I was very insecure in my skin. You know, I'm very dark complected, and I was plus size. I had these full lips. I had these big eyes, you know, this large forehead, all these things. I picked all of these things out that I felt was wrong with me. And I used those things to justify the things that had happened. And so moving forward, I met this young man who became a friend of mine, and we started out friends, someone that saw the beauty in me when I couldn't. He was the first person that told me I was beautiful. Aww. And in that, we developed a relationship, and it was very different because I was a homegirl. My mom had me in church 5, 6 days a week. You know, I couldn't go outside. I couldn't go anywhere. That's just how I was raised. So I was very conservative. He, on the other hand, was someone that was in the street. He was actually a drug dealer.
Oh, the bad boy.
And I didn't even know. He was a bad boy. And I didn't know because I wasn't out there. Most of our time was spent talking on the phone. And then when I got old enough to understand and we developed a true relationship, the abuse began. And the reason why the abuse began was because he had a drug addiction too.
Wow.
So you ask, how does a drug dealer also, you know, use drugs? Well, he was selling drugs to support his habit. I stayed in that situation for several years. Moving forward, I decided in 2003, when he was incarcerated, to relocate to Marietta, Georgia. So I packed up everything I had. I had a car that was paid for. I paid rent for 3 months, and I moved to Atlanta, Marietta. And he followed me when he got out of jail.
Wow.
I think he got a couple of months later, and he found me. I don't know how, but he found me. And as afraid of him as I was, I told him that I needed him to leave. He cursed me out. He called me everything but a child of God, but I drove him to the bus stop and I left him there. And that is how it ended. Fast forward, I started my first corporate job, at 20, I think it was 24.
Yes.
And I was 24 years old. Started out in a call center. You know, to me, what I was making was a lot, but in reality, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But coming from, you know, a small town where you made like $7 or $8 an hour, $28,000 a year was a lot to me.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of how my journey began to start to see beyond the victim mentality, because I carried a victim mentality from the age of 8 up until the point of walking away from that situation.
Right.
So I'm going to pause for a little bit because I know I just said a whole lot, but I didn't know if you had any questions in between before I continue to move forward as to what how I got to this point. So I'm going to pause and be quiet. I'm a talker.
No. I was just soaking it all up because, first of all, that is a lot. That is a lot. Mm-hmm. I can imagine the trauma that you was in far as being a kid and witnessing yeah. that. And then your mother at that. That yes. alone is just hard alone. So that the fact that you have to overcome that in itself is big. Mm-hmm. And then to become an adult and then to meet somebody and then not even realize that you basically in the same situation that you kind of your mother was in. And I'm pretty yeah. sure you never even thought that that would ever be you. Because I know as a kid, you probably like, oh, this would never be me. You know, like I know, mm-hmm. I know what to look for. I know what I'm not going for. And then to yeah. find yourself in that situation, I couldn't imagine how you felt.
Absolutely. It felt weird. Oddly enough, it felt normal. Right. It felt like it was nothing wrong with it. Of course, it didn't feel okay when I was in it, when I was getting hurt, when he was hitting me and those kind of things. It didn't feel okay then, but it was just like, okay, it's just, I saw my mom go through it. So, okay. Right. You know, and he apologized. So, okay, you know, it is what it is. You know, we had an argument and that's how we duke it out, you know, and duke right. it out is not me fighting back. I just simply took the hits.
Right.
You know, it wasn't me. I didn't know how to fight. I wasn't raised to defend myself. Not that my mom was a weak woman. She's a very strong woman, mm-hmm. but I wasn't raised in that environment. I was raised in church. Love. My grandmother was, you know, my grandmother was very old fashioned. She believed in people staying together, even if they go through abuse. So I was raised in an environment where it was like, okay, we're going to keep you protected as much as we can. And we're going to, this is what's right. Your mom is going to stay in this. It just was a different dynamic.
Exactly.
And so for me, it felt like, okay, this is normal. It took me walking away, sitting back and looking at my life. And processing that child that was still inside of me. I hadn't processed, really and truly processed what I saw when exactly. I was 7 or 8 years old. I really hadn't. I hadn't had the conversation with my mom about how that felt to me. My mom mm-hmm. never brought it up to me. You know, so here I am in my 20s and I still hadn't had that conversation with my mom about why that happened. You know, that I saw it and I remembered. She didn't even know that I remembered it.
Right.
You know,
because
so
as an adult, you wouldn't think that your kids would remember stuff like that because you'd be like, they kids, they don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But it sticks.
So, yes, it did. And my first corporate job, I will tell you something that totally helped change the way that I viewed life was I was used to the small town mentality, right? So I would mm-hmm. come here, I'm like, oh, $28,000 a year. Oh, that's a lot of money when I was making hardly nothing in Brunswick. Mm-hmm. And I remember wanting, after about 5 years, I wanted to be promoted to the call center manager. Everyone that came through there, I trained them, whether they were in our department or another department. I did all of most of the management work. You know, it was an easy job for my manager because right. I did a lot of it. And I won't say who, but someone said to me, because at the time I had a degree in fashion design, an associate's degree that I didn't use. It was a degree that I pursued because I didn't know what I wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
And I remember them saying to me, you won't get a promotion with just a fashion design degree. You're not going to go anywhere. And so unless you go back to school, you're not going to get a promotion.
Wow, that was mean.
So I tell you what I did. Oh, yeah, it was mean. So not only did I go back to school to get an associate's degree, I obtained 2 associate's degree, 2 bachelor's degree, 2 master's degree, several certifications, and then which completely surpassed that person's education, completely
Period.
Surpassed their education, obtained numerous certifications. Moving forward, I now have an honorary doctorate, which in humanitarian work. So at the end of the day, that person challenged me and showed me just how strong I could be. Because in that moment, when they said those words to me, it broke me.
I could imagine.
It broke me. You know, because it's like, you're not going anywhere. So even after
exactly.
that, it still took another 5 years before they would even consider. The second master's degree is when I got my promotion.
But at the job.
At that same job, once I finished my second master's degree, by the way, I finished my second master's degree the day before I gave birth to my daughter.
Period.
So at that point is when I actually received my promotion. So I had to put in about 10 years into a company before they would see my worth.
These companies again, don't be loving us. I swear they don't.
No love at all. But when I tell you, God is good. God is good. Because I was carrying so much hurt, insecurity, victim. I felt like a victim inside. I had the victim mentality, which is a no-no, but I had a victim mentality, insecure with the way that I still was insecure with the way that I looked. I wanted my daddy. My daddy was never in my life. I wanted so much love and I couldn't get it. But at the end of the day, it is that everything was being thrown at me. It was work. I conceived a child, and in that conception of a child, there was a disagreement between the father and I, you know, and it was again a repeat of the same situation I went through when my mom found out she was pregnant with me. My dad wanted her to abort me. She said, the devil is a lie. Same thing happened with me and my daughter. The devil is a lie, because my daughter, here we move into something more. I was diagnosed with infertility, polycystic ovary syndrome, when I was 18 years old, and told that I may never have children. I could consider, you know, IVF, I could consider fertility drugs and those kind of things. But at the end of the day, I had polycystic ovary syndrome, and they didn't see. Like, they gave me a percentage, a low percentage of the possibility of me having a child. Right? So, again, moving forward, 35 years old, I find out I'm pregnant 12 pregnancy tests later.
So she's a miracle baby.
I didn't believe it. Yes, she absolutely is. I took 12 pregnancy tests because I said, this is not real. This cannot be real. How can this be?
That's the definition of, if it's meant to happen, it will be.
Yes, there goes another miracle, right? And it's like, all I can say is, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have my child if I didn't believe in God's ability. If I didn't believe and I was not a believer, she wouldn't be here today. Because I tell you, it couldn't have been anything else. I wasn't taking any fertility drugs. None of that. I was on, to be quite honest and fully transparent, I was on birth control. Where does that happen?
Right.
You know? So it's like, it was meant to be. And I want to go back just a little bit too, because I think this is really important. I'm also a survivor of suicide attempts. I attempted to take my life twice at 18.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're still here.
Yes, ma'am.
Because we would not be here to be having this conversation, and you would not have been able to achieve all those achievements that you have achieved.
I would have never been able to. 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I would have never been able to easily and comfortably say, I am a survivor of suicide attempts. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I would have never been able to say that. And to be quite honest, I need to correct and check myself. I am a thriver of suicide. I am a thriver. I am a thriver of domestic violence. I am not. Not only did I just survive it, honey, I'm thriving beyond it.
And
so at the end of the day, I am a thriver, period, point. There you go.
Okay. And no more need to be said, because that was beautifully said. That was beautifully said. So domestic violence and PTSD and anxiety are rarely talked about in full truth, especially in the Black community. Mm-hmm. What did healing actually look like for you in the early days? Like, once you overcame all of that, what did it look like for you? Was it hard, messy?
It was hard and messy. And I'll be honest, it still is. What helped me was writing.
Love that.
Started writing. And when I say writing, not journaling, I was writing books. I wrote my very first book, and it was called Heaven Rain on Me So That I Can Be the Black Woman That God Planned For Me To Be. And it's the title alone tells you she didn't know what the heck she was doing, because that title was crazy. You know, it's a book of poems and the story of what I went through. And that is when the process started, because I gave the book to my mom to let her read it. And that's when she learned that I remembered when she was abused. That's when she learned that I was abused. I didn't tell my mom that I was in an abusive relationship.
Why not?
I just felt like she would tell me to leave him, and I didn't want to. I felt like she wouldn't approve. And of course she wouldn't. If she loved me, she wouldn't approve of that. And then I think a part of me, even though I didn't say it, was ashamed.
Yeah.
Ashamed that, you know, people looked at me. A lot of people looked at me and thought, oh, she is just a good girl. She's a good woman. You know, she's a good, wholesome person. Like, I just didn't look like what people say that, you know, victims look like. And there is no look, by the way. There's no look. But there's an assumption that a victim looks beat down. They just, yeah, you know, don't take care of themselves. They just have this idea that there's a look, a face, a color, a race, a gender, an age. And there is none. No one is like null and void to being in an abusive relationship. No, there's no face. It could be white, brown, green, yellow,
exactly,
any color. And so I didn't tell my mom until she read the book, and the book was sad. You know, again, it was in my early days. It ended sad. It's normally supposed to end on a high note, but it just ended sad. It was just like a whole book full of tears. Aww. And, you know, that was my process that I started to heal because I shared it in the book.
That's your healing. Move
fast forward forward. I began to continue to write more. I sought out therapy. And even today, I still am in therapy. And I'm in therapy because I still have triggers. They will be there. There's a certain amount of healing that can happen. But unfortunately, because of the trauma, there isn't complete healing. You will always have memories. There's going to be triggers. And at the end of the day, I receive that. I don't love saying that, but that's my truth.
Right.
And I, you know, sometimes my anxiety is so bad that I do have to take a Xanax. I do. And, you know, the one thing about that is I told my doctor, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. And I took myself off of it for like, I think about 3 or 4 months. I was like, I'm not doing this. This is not what God wants for me. This is not what I want for me. I don't want to depend on medicine.
Yeah.
And honey, when I had an anxiety attack and I didn't know how to settle myself, and the prayer wasn't working, and the breathing wasn't working, I was like, you know what, Sonia, at the end of the day, you need help, right?
That's okay.
And that is okay. You can't solely depend on one thing. So I am in therapy. I see my therapist religiously. She is awesome. We have the best relationship. We talk about not just what I've been through, but we talk about things that I'm encountering with my daughter. We talk about things that we talk about everything. And I need that because I can't talk to my mom or my sister about it. They're going to be biased. I need an unbiased person to support me.
Right.
And so what got me to the point of where I am, and it's a point of a large portion of healing, but not complete healing. But to have gotten to this point, I utilize writing. I utilize, you know, therapist. I utilize medication to help support me in those times where I just can't handle it. And I use prayer.
Right. But that's just finding your truth and what you need in order to help you get through whatever you're dealing with internally. And I love that you was able to realize that, because unfortunately, not a lot of people realize that. Mm-hmm. Like, they just don't. And then they go through life constantly in turmoil or fighting demons, and you chose to look at those demons and figure out what it is that you needed to get through, and now you're getting through, and I love that for you.
Thank you. I mean, because I my truth is I could not be here, right?
Exactly.
Two times I chose to take a full box of sleeping pills. The first time I was able to get, and this is sad, but this is my truth. The first time I was in the presence of my father, and because he did not want to be embarrassed, he bought a gallon of milk and told me to drink it so I could vomit, because he didn't want anyone to know. He didn't want me to go to the emergency room. He didn't want it to be in the local news, because they put those kind of things in the newspaper. So that's how we handled it the first time. The second time, I was out with a friend. And this is how I learned who my friends were. I was out with a friend, and she allowed me, she didn't fight me, on taking a whole box of sleeping pills. Next thing I know, the emergency squad was there taking me to the hospital. My stomach was getting pumped and I ended up in a mental health facility.
Whoa. At 19? But let me.
At 19. Wow. 18. I literally 18 the first time, 19 the second time. And when I went to that mental facility, I slept for a full day. I didn't even know where I was. I slept a full day. I saw the therapist at the facility the next day. We had a conversation and I remember her exact words. She said, "Sonia, have you seen the patients here?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she said, "I've been talking to you." I think we were talking for like 30 minutes at that point. She said, "I've been talking to you." And she said, "You're not supposed to be here. There is nothing wrong with you. You are not. There is nothing wrong with you. You just made a bad decision. You can do this." And I was released on the second day.
Wow. Okay. So you didn't stay in there that long.
I didn't say because I was not the typical. They did the analysis. I had the talk. I had all of that. And she said, "You're not supposed to be in a mental facility. All your faculties are together. Everything is together. You're answering these questions as if you made a bad decision and you shouldn't be here." She did prescribe me therapy, but even after seeing the therapist five times, that was it.
Wow.
That was it. You know, and so
you just had a at low the end point. Of the day,
I just had a very low point. And I think I was in that low point for a year, which is why I tried it twice.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I'm still here. And exactly. I'm grateful because I wouldn't be a mom. I wouldn't have accomplished the things that I've accomplished, which is not the greatest part of it. The greatest part of it is I am someone's mom.
I know that's right.
I am someone's mom. And I am loved unconditionally by that someone.
Yes, you are.
And that is the greatest thing that it I have truly in is. My life. The greatest accomplishment of anything I've ever. There's no paper. There's no document. There's no school education. There's no nothing that compares to the love I have for my child and the exactly. gift and the miracle that she has brought to my life.
They're such a blessing. Such a blessing.
Absolutely. They're a little bit aggravating blessing. Sometimes too, no. but yeah.
And if you in the stage that I'm in a toddler stage, baby, and he's oh, getting on my nerves. But they are a blessing.
Listen, well, wait till you get to the 14 age. That's when they start to, right now she's driving me up a wall.
To the teenage stage, I am not looking forward to it at all. I'm sorry, I'm not.
Oh my goodness.
Because I know teenagers go through a lot.
Oh yeah. And even, you know, my daughter has gone through a lot. Like to imagine having to watch my daughter go through a similar process as exactly. me with a father that doesn't embrace her. Mm-hmm. And she has a desire to be loved by a man, you know, right. a father figure. And unfortunately, I can love her hard, but I can't love her the way that a father can, you
exactly.
know. So, you know, it's been hard for her, too. And again, it's that makes it hard on me. But again, I have faith and I'm standing firm and knowing that I'm going through and I've been through all of these things for a reason.
You have.
And that reason is to be a testimony to support and help someone else that just feels that this is it, that there's no way out. And there is. There always is.
Always.
There's a way out.
Always.
So
many women live in silence. So what helped you find the strength to start speaking publicly about your experience?
So when I found my nonprofit organization in 2017, I found it on the premise of I wanted to help women. I did not know what that looked and felt like. I just knew that I wanted to help. I did not plan on being speaking. That was not something I wanted to do. What I did for my very first event was I pulled together a very intimate evening at a nice restaurant in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And I had a photographer. We had low lights, candles on the table. It was absolutely beautiful. It was more like a brunch.
That sounds so pretty.
It was beautiful. And what I did was I sought out survivors of domestic violence. I sought them out. And I sought out organizations that actually would come in and share about domestic violence and the things to look for and all of that. I didn't think about, well, Sonia, you're going to be hosting this event. So you're going to have to say something.
Were
and so when I stood, You couldn't even understand what I was saying. I was crying the whole time. You did a beautiful job, but I didn't understand half of what you were saying because it was like I was releasing. And I was releasing in front of a room of people who understood where I was coming from. And I was afraid. I was broken up. Everything. I was all of that. But once I finished sharing my message, and I sat down to take in the messages of the other beautiful thrivers. Now, again, not survivors, the beautiful thrivers that share, because there was all ages, you know, early 20s up to 60 years old. We had Marcy's Law there, which advocates for, you know, making sure that survivors are notified or victims are notified when their offender goes through the system. They were there and present. We had Partnerships Against Domestic Violence was present to share about their resources and materials. I had a saxophone player there. You know, it was just a very beautiful event. That was my first time. And that is what pushed me out there. So then I became an advocate for Marcy's Law, which was passed in Georgia, in the state of Georgia, again, to notify the victims when their offender is moving through the system. So for instance, say that a victim, their offender is in prison, is in jail. Mm-hmm. When they were going through the system, it was many times where victims weren't notified when they were released. And guess what? Some victims were killed as a result of that. Marcy was one of those individuals where her offender was released from prison and jail and came out and killed her.
Wow.
And so this was implemented, and I was one of the many faces that actually did a public service announcement on Marcy's Law and the importance of having it. So that was then maybe like the third time I shared my testimony. But that time, that particular time, I was very strong. And I continued to grow. The more that I shared the story, whether it was in writing or whether I was speaking it, I began to become stronger and more confident in my walk and my purpose. And I think at the end of the day, it was being able to connect with other women, other men, other people who had gone through that same thing that had no shame.
Yes.
That's what gave me the strength to get to the point where it was nothing to have a conversation about what I've been through. Yes. Yes.
Love that.
Yes, but instead a big family, like a big family that just loves on you.
Yes,
it's amazing. It's amazing. It's heartbreaking. It's really not. There's not enough resources. There's not enough motivation out there to bring out those people who are being victimized. They're afraid because there's so many things that could happen to them. Mm-hmm. And they need a lot more of this. They need to see and hear voices like mine and faces like mine that have been through it and made it through and are killing it. I'm not saying I'm killing it. I'm simply saying, honey, I'm not just surviving. I'm thriving. And I will always say that. I will always say that because I could be dead today. And I'm not.
And you're not.
I'm very much alive.
And is. And I loved that for you. I love your whole message. The whole thriving through. Yes, I am here for it. So what's been the hardest truth you had to accept about yourself while healing?
You know, this is one that I don't speak about often, but it has been very difficult for me to love. I have been single for 10 years.
Wow. That's
single, no dating, no nothing. Literally, no dating at all. And it's very difficult for me to allow someone to get close to me. That has been the most difficult thing. There's boundaries. There's certain ways that you can't touch my shoulder. You can't touch my back. There's certain things that really trigger me. And there has to be a very understanding person in order to receive those things, those flaws in me. And I know that there's someone out there that will. Mm-hmm. I'm just not ready for that. And that's been one of the hardest things, because when I think about my child is going to be grown soon and I'll be here alone, I don't embrace or want that. But that's just a part of me that's just having a hard time healing. That's a part of me. Here I am, I'm 49, and I'm having a hard time healing that part of me.
Do you think you ever will?
I honestly don't know, but I pray that I will, because I know that there is someone for me.
Yes.
I just have to be open and willing to allow them to be. So I'm hoping that one day I will be, but right now I'm just not. I'm just not ready for it. Mm-mm.
Okay.
And it's like when I say 10 years, you're like, what? You're 39 years old. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. That's the wrong thing to say. This is a choice that I've made. And unfortunately, I'm just not ready.
But
to
you've
be
been
in a
focused though. Even though I it's have been 10 years, look how much you accomplished in those 10 years though. So yeah, you didn't have somebody, but you were still focused and moving and accomplishing stuff. So it wasn't all, you know, bad.
Yeah, it's
but love is beautiful though.
It is, and I have one of the women that was a part of a project I worked on. Oh my goodness, her testimony is beyond crazy and wild. Like, you just wouldn't, it's something you see on a Lifetime movie. And she found love, you know, around the age that my age. And so I haven't given up. I just don't really know if I'm definitely going to be open one day. I can't answer that, but I hope so. I hope that one day I will have someone that will love me, flaws and all.
And at the end, it will, because it's somebody for everybody. I truly believe that. Somebody for everybody. But like you said, as long as you say, like, no, you're not ready, it probably will never come. You definitely do have to be open, at least.
I have to be. And I have to work through that part of me. And that's why it's like, it's for me, transparency is key. And it's just unfortunate that 10 years have passed and I'm still kind of in this space. But I also have to say, I haven't invested the time and effort into saying, okay, here I am, open, you know, instead of looking the other way. If someone says something, I'll speak hello and I keep going. You know, I'm not allowing myself to be in those spaces to have that, you know. So I'm prayerful that one day I will. And I have faith that there's another person that I know. I think she met her husband in her 60s and she's happy, you know.
Period.
So it may happen.
It's not about when. It's not even about when. Because like you said, it can happen at any time. Long as it's real and it's true and it's, you know, and you feel good, then that's all that matters.
Absolutely.
So you use your voice on multiple platforms to advocate for others. What message do you hope sticks with every person who hears your story?
That the biggest thing for me is, and I hear this a lot, you don't look like you've been through that. You don't look like you don't look like you were, like, you're too strong for that. I can't imagine you being like, you were in an abusive relationship. Really? Like, I want them to understand this. There is no face. There's no specific face, no specific gender, no specific age, no specific weight. There's no certain look. It happens.
Exactly.
And don't ask. You know, one thing I want people to understand and know, don't ask them why are they still in the situation.
Right.
Because you don't understand. And it's very difficult to articulate the reason. Obviously, exactly. It's love. But that makes people feel small. When you've been through that, it makes you feel small. Like, why are you still in that situation? That's what makes individuals not want to say, I'm in an abusive relationship. So I want people to, one, understand that there's no particular face of what a victim looks like.
It's not.
And then secondly, have empathy.
Period.
Be kind.
Yes.
Be kind, right? Be kind with us because we're broken. We're hurting. We've been through a lot, right? So be kind and understand there's reason, there's logic to why we're still in that situation or why we went through it. My logic is it's generational. So I saw something and I just thought it was normal. But guess what? That buck stops right here. Because my daughter is very aware. I've been educating her since she was 4 years old on what domestic violence is, what abuse is, what's inappropriate, what's not appropriate, what is the wrong touch. My daughter can tell you from front to back what that looks like. And I want that generational curse to stop here.
Period.
So that is that's what I want people to know. If you don't understand the deep-rooted reason why, try to educate yourself and be gentle. Be very gentle with us because you don't know what got us to that point. So be thoughtful of your words and be kind.
Yes.
Just be kind.
There's not enough kind people. And I say that all the time. Like, people are just not kind. Like, there's a lot of people out here who just truly don't care about others. And that is just so baffling to me because I feel like we are all human, like you say, and we all go through stuff. It doesn't have a look. We all can relate on something. Like, okay, even though I may not have been in an abusive relationship, I can understand the pain that you went through and what you had to get through, and understand that you still dealing with PTSD. That's all that it could take sometimes. Just understanding. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to go through stuff to understand.
Mm-hmm. Show the empathy, right? Like, exactly. Just know that what you say to someone, depending on where they are in life, could essentially, and it's just this serious, excuse me, it could essentially determine whether that person lives today or tomorrow.
Exactly.
Because you could say one last thing to trigger them and they could say, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I can't. I look stupid. I just talked to this person. They just made me feel small. I can't get any smaller than I am. I just can't do this anymore. And they could just take their lives. It's just that's how serious it is.
Because there's power in words. Whether people,
it is.
It's power in words.
It can give life. Those words can give life to people. It can speak life into someone. And it can take life out of them.
Mm-hmm. That was beautifully said. I love that. And you kind of touched on this, the next question. Basically, the question was, as a mother, how did your healing journey affect the way you show up for your children? And you started saying that you tell her, as you've been educating her since 4, like, Noel, this is what domestic violence is. These are signs. How else have it affect the way you show up for your children?
I love her hard. Yeah. I love her hard. And my parenting style is so different from the parenting style that my mom and my, you know, my grandmother had. I talk to her about the hard stuff, right? And
I love that.
I talk to her with love, right? About respect, and not only respecting herself, but requiring and demanding respect. Not giving someone the option to respect you. You don't give them the option. You make them respect you.
Exactly.
And if someone treats you a certain way or speaks to you a certain kind of way, honey, that's an indication that something's not right. Whether it's verbal, because, you know, domestic violence is not always just physical. It's verbal. It's financial. It's emotional. Exactly. It's physical. So for me, it taught me how to show up for my daughter 1,000%. And I'm not saying that to take away from the way my mom loved me, because she loved me like no other. I have the best mom in the world. Okay. But I'm aware of what I saw as a child, and I don't want my child to see that or to endure that. So I want to equip her with the knowledge, with the examples. Like I told her, transparent, honest, raw, this is what I went through. This is what it felt like. Baby, sometimes when you see me and I'm like really like antsy, she'll hold my hand because she knows what's going on. I'm having an anxiety attack.
And
she'll
hold my hand. That's so beautiful. So
it is. That's why I have a really different relationship with my daughter. And it's because of, she doesn't know it, wasn't intentional, wasn't even her job, but she's helped heal me.
Yes.
She's helped heal me because she's shown me that miracles really are real.
Yes.
She showed me unconditional love. And when I'm having those moments and anxiety attacks or panicking, she will hold my hand. She will rub my shoulder. She will something. She knows and understands. And when those triggers happen, she knows just what to do. And I'm so very proud of her for listening and for being there and for being aware.
And I love that. And that must be beautiful to see, like, that you raised a daughter like that. So kind, so caring, so understanding. I love that. Mm-hmm. Love
Thank
that.
Because
there's not
Thank
enough
you.
People out here like that, and we need more.
We do.
We really, really do. So they're the difference between surviving and thriving. So yes, what has helped you make that shift?
For me, it's always been like, even going back to when I was told, you know, you're not going to go anywhere in this company with just the associate's degree, blah, blah, blah. For me, it's always been, I don't want to just be surviving. I don't want to just be like, okay, I'm here, I'm existing, I'm not doing anything to get any better. I go to a job every day and I'm just taking mediocre, you know, I'm just here. That's surviving. Like, I'm just making it. I'm not trying. I'm just kind of, I made it through, and I'm too proud to do therapy, too proud to do medicine. I'm just here. Right. Just surviving, just making, just saying that I'm, you know, like someone may say it back in the olden day, or back some years ago. So how you doing? I'm surviving. You know, I'm making it. I'm just barely making it. That's what surviving looks and sounds like to me. Thriving is when you get hold to that bull, that trauma, you grab hold to it and you say, you know what? I'm not going to survive. I'm going to thrive. And for me, that means that I'm going to deal with all of these issues. The gong that just came out, the Southern Belle came out. I'm so sorry. But no, I'm not. But it's a gong. Listen, I am going to break this generational curse. I'm going to look this demon in the face and say, okay, this is not happening. You will not consume me. I am not going to be afraid to stand up in front of these people and share my testimony. And maybe I will be afraid. Let me take that back. I'm not going to bow back. I'm not going to sit back, and I'm not going to pull out. I'm going to push through. I'm going to share my message. I'm going to speak up. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to recognize when something isn't right. I'm going to support. I'm going to speak life into another person who's going through. I'm going to encourage you, and I will hold your hand.
Love
that.
That's
what thriving looks like to me.
That is what thriving looks like. That was beautifully fighting. Said, because that is thriving. Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I'm not putting anyone down for saying, you know, I'm surviving. But at the end of the day, you have a choice to survive or to thrive. It's up to you whether you want to fight for it or not. I will fight for it. I have been fighting for it, and I will continue to fight for it until the day that I die.
Love that. And it's so funny that you said that, because so before I changed the name, so my podcast name used to be called Her Way Through. And then I literally changed it probably like a few weeks ago to Surviving Me. And it's so funny that we're talking about this, because I feel like Her Way Through was just, you know, it was the birth of it. It was how I chose to be like, you know what, I'm trying to get through what I'm going through. I'm trying to get through it. So as you know, it go on and you go through more things. And then I realized, you know what, I'm not even getting through it. I'm more so just surviving it. Which is hence the change to the name of the podcast. It's like, okay, I'm not getting through it. I'm surviving right now. But eventually, I will be through it. Okay. Exactly that. That was, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
But you know what? I'm going to tell you this. So when I first found my organization, when I first built it out and became the founder, it was named Women of Virtue Transitional Foundation. Again, there goes that long name, right? But what I did in the interim, in 2018, I applied for a trademark. And the trademark was Thrive Her. I did not know what I was going to do with it, nor why I came up with that name back then. I got the trademark, you know, I was utilizing the trademark. It was the theme of my events, but I did not know what I was going to do with it. It wasn't until 2023 that I changed the name from Women of Virtue Transitional Foundation to Thriver Incorporated. Because one, the name was extremely long, but then also it was like Thriver, you know, Thriver. She is a Thriver. She's a Thriver. And if the men that I encounter, he's a Thriver. He's a Thrive Him, if we want to do it. He's thriving in his survivorship. He surpassed that. He's thriving. She's thriving. And so for me, it's like Thriver defines who I am. And why would I not use that as the name of my organization when that is who I am? Exactly. When you see me, I go, that's Thriver. That's the founder of Thriver. That's right. Thriver, the book Thriver, the unstoppable Thriver, the blueprint of a Thriver, thriving from surviving to thriving, the blogging Thriver. That's who I am.
And I loved it.
That I had no idea why I wanted to trademark that name. Didn't even know. I knew I loved it. Yes.
Yeah, because that was that. A lot of times people don't do stuff like that because they be like, they probably think like, oh, it's not, you know, this is just something I came up with. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you know, like it's not that serious. But then as time go on and you start to see like this one name just keep following and you are making it bigger, and then it could possibly be too late. So it's good that you actually took the, you know what, I'm just going to trademark it. Regardless if I don't know why the name is there, I'm still just going to trademark it. That was beautiful.
When I tell you, I didn't know. But honey, it's who I am. It's who I am. It's what I see in women I speak life into. It's the epitome of not allowing, you know, domestic violence to take away your power, to take away your desire and your passion to thrive and to move beyond just surviving. Period. That's what a thriver means to me, is really fighting for life, fighting for positivity, fighting for the courage to do whatever it is. That's what it is to me.
That's exactly what it is. And I love that. So I'll get into the second to last question.
Yes.
What's something you had to survive within yourself before you could show up fully in the world today?
Oh my gosh, that's a hard question.
Yeah, that was pretty deep.
Oh,
that was pretty deep.
Oh my God. I'm going to need you to repeat that question one more time so I can process.
Okay. No, okay, because that was pretty deep. So what's something you had to survive within yourself before you could fully show up in the world today?
The little girl that didn't love herself.
Love that.
I had to, because as I said in the beginning, I saw myself as this ugly, dark skin, all these ugly, ugly, ugly things. I saw all of these ugly things in myself, and it's because of my childhood. It's because of my relationship, well, the lack of a relationship with my father and the impression that he made on my life. And so I had to, one, deal with that child that felt like she was ugly and she was nothing. And she was just, you know, I just thought some of the most horrible things about myself. I had to face that child.
Right.
And in facing that child today, yes, I do have a big forehead. Yes, I do have dark skin. Yes, I do have full lips. Yes, I do. Yet my eyes, one of my eyes is bigger than the other, but they're chinky, you know, and it's like my daughter has the same eye, you know, it's like, but I love it. People don't, right, like, I don't even notice it. If you didn't tell me, I wouldn't have noticed it, you know, and it's like people compliment me all the time on this dark skin that I once hated.
Yes.
You know, and it's like at the end of the day, I faced that little girl. And that little girl, she's still in there, but she's thriving along with this woman here today.
And I love that. Yes, because people do not heal their inner child, okay? You cannot fully get to where you are and be the woman or the man that you're meant to be if you do not heal your inner child first, because whether we want to admit it or not, what we go through, all the experiences we go through, what we see, how we feel, and all that stuff affects our adult life today. I know a lot of people may think like, oh, because that happened when you was a kid, it's over with, it's done, whatever, I'm moving on. And that's not true, because it will follow you into your adult life if you do not handle it and deal with it and face those demons. Because sometimes it's hard to walk down that tunnel. It is. And I'm not going to be the one to be like, okay, sometimes it's easier to just be like, okay, well, it happened, and push it to the back burner. The hard part is walking down that tunnel and facing it. Like, okay, this has happened. This is how it made me feel. And this is how I'm going to get through this. That's hard.
That's right.
But when you do it, oh my God, you come out. The other end is so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
You've never told a tale. It is absolutely beautiful and so empowering and invigorating. It is all of that.
Yes.
It's hard now. It's definitely hard. And that hole that you have to walk down, that corridor that's dark and scary, you have to go down that hallway. But once you get to the other side and you see the light, honey, it's beautiful.
It is. It is.
Absolutely.
Because it's no longer hanging over you no more. It's more, mm-hmm. instead of hanging over you like this dark cloud, it's now mm-hmm. like you're wearing it with honor. Like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I went through that and I'm here. You know, I'm here, I'm healed, and I went through it and I got through it. Okay. And I'm going to continue getting through it. So it goes from mm-hmm. it hanging over you as this dark cloud to you wearing it with honor.
That's right. That's
love
right.
That. Love that. Right. That. Mm-hmm. Love that. So the last question, even though I love this conversation and I always take the time to thank the guests because I'm truly honored that you even took the time and want to be on my little podcast. Like, yes, I'm here for it. And I love that you even considered it or even wanted to be a guest. I'm so excited. And I love this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank for just you. Being no, open thank you to- for allowing me to be on your platform, ma'am. Listen, your little platform is honey. Listen. Your little platform is not a little platform. It's bigger, and it's bigger than what you're giving yourself credit for, because you don't know how many people's lives will be changed from the people that come and share on your show. So don't do that, girl.
Yes, listen, and that's my main goal. Like, that's truly my main goal, because I believe that healing should be a community thing. You do not have to heal alone. And I know a lot of times when you're going through that hard time and them hard stuff, that's the first thing you feel is alone. Like, oh my God, nobody understands what I'm going through. Nobody could get it. And I just feel so alone. But I just want this podcast to show people that even though sometimes you may feel alone, there is others out there that's going through the same exact thing as you. And this is how they're getting through it. And maybe you listening to however they got through it can help you get through it. Or it could just be something like, you know what? I'm not alone. And even if that's all it does for you, then my mission was done.
But you know, another thing that I'm going to tell you is I prefer conversations like this that are like this.
Yes.
Comfortable. You know, you make it feel like I'm talking to my homegirl. I'm talking to my cousin. I'm talking. You know, that's why I'm like, no. There needs to be more platforms like this because stuffy. You know, you have to be uptight and you have to pronunciate. Well, honey, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to call you honey 1,000 times. It sound like I'm just to be sitting on somebody's southern porch because I'm a southern belle. And I just enjoy those kind of conversations because it makes you feel comfortable where you share. You're creating a safe space. Where,
and that's
where
my
you
goal.
Can
and I
share.
Hope you felt comfortable because I know we don't know each other, and you don't know me from a can of paint. And I know that alone could just be scary. Like, I'm about to come on here and talk to this stranger, spill my truths, my hard truths and stuff. And so I know that alone is hard for people because, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about this. A lot of people don't want to be judged. But my main goal for every guest that come on, whether I've known you for years or whether I just met you, I still want you to feel like, you know what, that's my girl. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I feel. That's why I wanted to make sure and make a point that this, your little old show is a safe, comfortable space. Like,
I love that.
I enjoy speaking, but I prefer intimate, safe, comfortable spaces. And that's what you're creating. So keep doing what you're doing because
yes.
I just spilled all my goods. You know, I just spilled all the details, just gave it all out, you know? But it's okay. And I don't mind.
And I love it. I'm so glad that you was even comfortable enough to do that. Yes, you was open.
Absolutely.
You was honest. And you just living in your truth. And I couldn't.
Yes.
Oh my God. I love that. I love that for you. And I love that you was even comfortable enough to come on here and do that. So yes. So,
Absolutely.
I always ask one question before I wrap it up. Well, actually, I got two questions for you. So, if there's one thing every woman surviving abuse needs to hear, what would you tell her? Or men, because men go through abuse too.
You can do anything. You can do anything. That situation does not define who you are. It's a been through. It's a been through. You've been through it. And if there's something you want to do, whether it's loving again, whether it's pursuing and sharing your testimony to pour into other people, whether it's just writing a book, whatever it is, you can do it. Anything. Going through that situation doesn't define you.
Period.
It doesn't define you. it creates, and some people may disagree, it creates an opportunity for you to not only show compassion, but for you to connect with someone who's going through it. It creates an opportunity for you to be a resource, for you to speak life into someone, and for someone to receive it as someone who's been through what they're going through. That's what it is. That's my words, my very words. At the end of the day, you can do anything.
You sure can. And I live by that. My main quote, I live by a lot of quotes, but one of my main quotes is, you can do anything you put your mind to. Nothing is unreachable. If you put in that work, if you put in that dedication, you can do anything you put your mind to. I live by that quote because I believe it. I know it to be true. I've seen it. You see it you see it all the time. When people come on here and tell their stories, like, oh, I done been through the gutter, like, I've been through the mud, and I'm here. That's people showing you, like, they put their mind to it, and look where they got them. So you can do anything. Don't ever think anything is unreachable.
Right. And don't put a time on it.
Hello.
Don't put a time on it. My journey started a long time ago, and it took me a long time to get here, and I did not give up. Never give up, and don't put time on anything. It will happen in the right time, but you have to be patient with yourself and gentle with yourself. You've got to be.
Give yourself grace.
Yes.
Give yourself grace.
Yes.
We don't do that enough. So if this conversation was a chapter in your healing book, what would you call it?
I'm telling you, these questions are killing me. My goodness. Oh goodness.
They definitely get you thinking. They get you thinking.
So, you know what I would have to say? I wrote a poem that I'm going to be publishing sometime soon, and I'm going to be sharing it too at my first spoken word event.
Just a little plug.
I've never done it. Yes, I'm so excited about it, but I think I would call it The Swallow.
Oh.
And the reason why I would call it The Swallow is because I just shared a lot. I just swallowed a lot of information. I just swallowed a lot of pride. I'm not ashamed, and I'm swallowing it all, and I'm processing it all, and I'm all good. The Swallow. The Swallow. You have to hear the poem. You have to hear it though. But I can't share it yet, but it will be out there. But it's really deep, and you would have to have heard the message in order to get it. But I would definitely call it The Swallow, because I'm taking a big swallow and I'm letting it all out. And at the end of the day, it's out there. I put it out there. It can't be taken back. I've swallowed it. I've shared it out, and I'm good. I'm still breathing. I didn't die from sharing it. And guess what? At least one person, I'm pretty confident, at least one person will be touched by my transparency.
And that's the purpose.
My pride and my strength to swallow anything that could have been shameful, any feeling of discomfort. I swallow it and I share everything out. Because someone is going to be touched by this message. At least one person.
I love that.
So I would have to say The Swallow. Yeah.
That's so deep, but I'm so here for it because you can see I'm a very, very deep person.
Yes, you are. You're stumping me over here.
Yes, I've been told that all my life that I'm a deep person, and I always just felt like I was a deep person. But I also felt that there's not enough deep people. People don't like to get deep. People like to talk about surface level stuff. And don't get me wrong. Okay, that is cool. Like, okay, yeah, I can talk about the sky, the color, my favorite food. I can talk about that all day. But it'd be the conversations where you could get deep and the have you thinking, that have you like, you know what? I didn't even order realizations, because sometimes having a conversation can help you realize stuff about yourself. I'm all for conversations about that. And people don't do that enough. Like, people don't have conversations like that enough, and they need to. Because when you get deep, that's how you build genuine connections. And I'm all for it.
Well, honey, you've been saying I'm all for it. I'm all for it. You have asked some really stumping questions. Like, I was like sitting here like, oh my goodness, what? I don't know. Well, I don't know. Can we keep it on the surface? Didn't I tell you I just had a long day?
But no, you answered them all beautifully, though. Like, they felt like they was well thought out. They was great.
Oh, thank you. I did tell you I had a long day now. I'm teasing.
She definitely did. She started the conversation. That's the first thing she said. But you would never have even thought that. Like, just hearing all everything you said and how you beautifully said it. I doubt people would have thought you had a long day. It was so beautiful. I loved it.
Thank you.
I loved it.
Telling you, like, we have to do something else again because I really have enjoyed this experience. I have got to stay in contact with you because when I come across people like this that make me feel this way, there's a divine connection of some form or fashion, and you're good at what you're doing. It's those conversations like this. Again, I don't like those stuffy interviews. I don't like stuffy conversations. I like to be able to be the me, the real me, able to speak and talk and share in a place of comfort and a place of safety and a place of joy and laughter. And you create that. I really want you to process this feedback. You're creating a space for people like me to share comfortably. And that is a gift.
I don't understand. Like, doing this thing is hard. Like, starting your business, I literally just started this almost a month ago. And I never knew how much starting your business is so hard. And then I'm doing everything by myself. So a lot of times I get discouraged. Like, you know what, girl? Why are you putting yourself through all this stress? Just let it go. But you know what? And I'd be like, you know what? No, I can't, because this is something I'm passionate about. I truly believe in the messages I'll be saying and the stories I'll be telling, my solo episodes, and the fact that my goal for this podcast alone, like, yes, it's small now, but I see it getting big. I see it being a community that I want it to be. That's my whole goal, for people to know, like, it's, you're not alone. You're not alone.
And as long as you stay this way, remain transparent, remain real, remain the true you, don't conform to what everybody else is doing, it won't be small. And even if it is, so what? You're still touching lives, and it's going to grow. It's going to happen. You just have to remain consistent and remain to be who you are. Don't conform to what everybody else is doing. You know what I'm saying? Just to get some likes and some follows and all of that.
Exactly.
Get the people on your show that will feel comfortable on your podcast sharing. And that's not hard. This dialogue that we're having, like, this is an example of just that. I'm telling you, I feel like I'm talking to my cousin or my homegirl. And that's what you want to feel like, because that's when you get more out of someone,
and
when they can feel comfortable.
Exactly. And that is my main goal. And I'm so happy that I achieved it with this episode. And I'm so even more excited that you want to come back, because I would love to have you back on. I'm here for, I love when my guests be like, oh, I want to come back. Like, for real, come talk to me again. Thank you for joining us for this powerful conversation with Dr. Sonya McKenzie. Her wisdom reminds us that healing isn't about survival. It's about learning how to thrive in the spaces we once felt broken. I know this episode is a little longer than usual, but the message was so powerful, I didn't want to split it into two. So welcome to our first hour-long episode. I truly hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And don't forget to subscribe to the Glow Letter for weekly reflections and prompts to keep your healing journey going. And if you have a story of your own, consider being a guest on Surviving Me, because your survival could be someone else's blueprint. Jumping right into the letter to the listeners, dear survivor or thriver, healing is not a race and it's not a straight line. Like Dr. Sonya shared, there's a season for surviving, but there's also a season for thriving. You don't have to have it all figured out to keep moving forward. You just have to keep choosing yourself, even on the hard days. If today reminded you of anything, let it be this. You are allowed to grow, to shine, and to thrive right where you are with what you have. no matter what page of healing you're on, you're not alone and you're not behind. Keep going through it, keep growing through it, and keep glowing through it, because the journey back to yourself is the real work. And I will see you next episode.
I've battled the silence, I've wrestled the shame, faced all my demons and called them by name. This ain't for sure, it's deeper than deep. I'm surviving.